You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, and for Cynthia Canty. 2017 is shaping up to be a banner year for the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. This July, the DSO goes on a three-week tour that takes director and conductor Leonard Slatkin and his 87 musicians to Japan and then on to China. Stateside Cynthia Canty recently spoke with Slatkin.
Maestro Slatkin, it's always a pleasure to welcome you to Stateside.
My pleasure to be back.
This is a tour that really has been a long time in the making, isn't it?
It has, but it also is something we knew we could not embark on until we had our financial house in order. We all vowed 6 years ago after the strike that we would not endanger any funding because of a tour. We would have to make sure that everything was put in place to make it possible and not increase a deficit because of a tour.
So knowing that the tour can happen and coming on the heels of the fact that the symphony has just had, what, its fourth year of a balanced budget?
Correct. And they just announced that they have a new three-year contract.
So, as you say, the financial house seems to be in order, and it is stunning to think about really what's been accomplished in just a few short years since that musician strike.
That's correct. It's not that we still don't have hurdles to jump over. There are pressing financial needs, particularly related to endowment, that we need to have all taken care of. But at least we knew we had the funding in place, raised separately, for a tour which we have wanted to do for quite a while.
And this is the first international tour for the DSO in 16 years and the first time the symphony has performed in China.
Yes, and the first time I will take them on an international tour.
All right, so you're giving 11 concerts in Japan and China. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little about how you plan out the music that you want to perform for these audiences?
It's a very complicated process that is not entirely finished yet. Japan has, for a long time, embraced the Western ensembles coming on tour. I've been to Japan. I go almost every year in some capacity, either conducting a Japanese orchestra or taking an orchestra on tour. What you need to understand is that economics come into play, in that the Japanese economy, like many around the world, is not as strong and stable as one would like. So the selling of tickets, with the competition with many orchestras going, is fierce. You rely primarily on either the reputation of the orchestra, then you're only talking about a select few like Berlin Philharmonic or Vienna or something like that, or you're talking about a program in which there is a soloist who is very well known. We went that route. The two soloists we have, one is the violinist Akiko Suenai, who I've worked with for a long time. Well, she has her own festival, and she invited the orchestra to come and play, and she is the soloist. They all know her. The other soloist is a pianist named Makoto Ozone, who is known primarily in the jazz world. He's classically trained, so he's been branching out and playing with orchestras. He alternates on our tour between playing the Rhapsody in Blue of Gershwin and the Rachmaninoff Paganini Rhapsody. So knowing we had him and that by himself he will give us good visibility and an opportunity to fill the halls, we could play around with the programming a bit. And so that's why we're able to play a great deal of American music on the Japanese leg of the tour, along with, I believe, a Brahms symphony that will go as well. But why not represent what the DSO has stood for during my tenure here in Detroit?
Mm. And then the Chinese leg will be different from the Japanese leg?
Yes, because the Chinese are still relatively new to the not only the world of Western musical culture, but new to the concept of orchestras touring on a regular basis. It's also a place where it's difficult to see people spending their leisure money on going to concerts. They tend to want to hear the standard repertoire, which is what Japan did 50 years ago. It was all Beethoven, Brahms, Tchaikovsky, whatever, until they really got familiar with the repertoire. And China is at that point now. So we're still negotiating some of the details of the repertoire, especially since a few of the cities we're playing in are not the usual suspects. So we're playing in some communities which may be hearing a U.S. orchestra for the first time.
Do you have musicians within the DSO who are from China and Japan?
We have many musicians from China, many from Korea, none from Japan. And that surprised me, too, because being in my early 70s now, I saw the first infusion of Asians in this country being Japanese musicians, and now more of the Japanese have moved to Europe, playing in European orchestras. We have several Chinese, including our first cellist and one of our titled violinists and others who are playing in the orchestra. So for them, this is a really exciting big deal.
What is it you're hoping that these audiences take away from the Detroit Symphony Orchestra? I mean, there you are representing Detroit.
Exactly. And we don't really know what either the Japanese or Chinese audiences know about our city. So we come as representatives of the city. So I'm hoping that the audiences at least come away with the understanding that Detroit is not just about business, it's not just about automobiles, but it's about a broad inclusiveness. I know our players are going to be involved in chamber music events, they're going to be involved in teaching, so it's really about establishing some ties.
Well, you're breaking ground. I mean, and it's especially exciting to think that you're not going to Beijing, you're going to be in cities that this is so new. Who are some of the big players as far as funding this? This has got to be an expensive tour.
Well, we have funding from Ford and General Motors. There's some other private contributors. Actually, even though we have the money in hand, we're still trying to solicit others. There's a lot that goes into touring. The main part of it is the traveling expense. You know, we don't have our own plane to get the orchestra over there.
You're not like the Detroit Red Wings.
Schlepping 7 and 8 double basses is not so easy, and all that percussion equipment, stuff like that. You're always looking for people to underwrite certain aspects of the tour itself. Anything that we get now is pretty much gravy above what we already have, but it could go to help implement other programs that we're doing on the tour itself.
The Mozart Festival, we have to talk about that, January 19th to February 5th. What's on offer?
Well, we have done 3 big festivals over the last 4 years. The first one was Beethoven. We had to see how that was going to go. And I think it's important for people to understand why I decided to do this. February, and in this case January, is a little tougher time for sales because a lot of our subscribers, patrons, donors aren't here. They have escaped to either sunnier or even snowier climes. So it means we have to rely more on a different kind of ticket buyer, a different kind of public. And I thought to focus at least for a few years on a single composer and a single body of works with many events that go on that are either related to the concerts or related to the composer, some fun, some serious. Like last year during the Brahms Festival, there was a Brahms beard growing contest, that kind of thing.
Indeed.
So we did Beethoven, we did Tchaikovsky, and we did Brahms, and we incorporated and played all the symphonies by those composers. The obvious composer to do next is Mozart, but less obvious is what we would play.
Yes.
The reason for that is simple. Mozart wrote 40 symphonies. I know that the last one is listed as 41, but nobody's ever found symphony number 37, so we don't know if it exists. Clearly, we're not going to play 40 symphonies in the course of 3 weeks.
I think not.
No.
So what have you chosen?
To make it a little bit different, but similar to what other ensembles have done, is symphonically to play the last 6 symphonies, which are generally considered to be the summit of his symphonic writing. They're all very different. They all have a degree of familiarity and popularity. What is very different is that we also decided to play every piece he wrote for solo wind instrument and orchestra. That means 1 concerto each for flute, oboe, bassoon, and clarinet. There are 4 concerti for French horns. Each one is being played by a different member of the DSO horn section. That's pretty impressive, actually. Then there is the flute and harp concerto. But we also added into the mix the ensemble concertos. There's what I consider to be one of the most sublime works in all of music, the Sinfonia Concertante for violin, viola, and orchestra, and also his concertone, which is for 2 violins, and orchestra, and there's a couple short pieces he wrote with orchestra, and along the way there's some overtures to fill in the time as we need it. So it's a nice portrait of the composer, both familiar and in some cases unfamiliar. There will be our usual mascot, obvious name of Wolfie. There will be Mozart beer on hand. There'll be the Mozart cookies. There'll be Austrian souvenirs. There'll be probably a dancing polka contest or something along the way. The whole idea is to give a true festive atmosphere to something that you call a festival.
Go to DSO.org to get all the details on the Mozart Festival, because there's free events. Well, it's a vibrant and exciting home stretch for you as you prepare to step down in 2018. We'll certainly look forward to talking with you, Meister Slack, and after China and Japan, it'll be exciting to hear all about how that went. Maestro Leonard Slatkin, Detroit Symphony Orchestra, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for taking time with us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.